Welcome to Audio Notes. I'm Patrick Castillo, and it's my pleasure to introduce you to this summer's Carte Blanche Concerts, Music at Menlo's signature series of artist-curated recitals. This season, as a complement to the festival's exploration of creative capitals, Music at Menlo offers four Carte Blanche concerts. On Sunday, July 15, violinist Paul Huang and pianist and festival artistic director Wu Han present a recital program of music by Beethoven, Brahms, Bartok, and Saint-Saëns. On Thursday, July 19, the Calidor String Quartet returns to Music at Menlo with a time-lapse musical portrait of Vienna, bridging the classical era and the Second Viennese School. For the summer's third Carte Blanche concert, the husband and wife duo of cellist Demetria Tappan and pianist Hye-Yun Park offer a marathon program spanning two centuries of the cello piano repertoire. The series concludes on Sunday, July 29, as Paul Neubauer and Michael Brown perform some of the 20th century's greatest works for viola and piano, from Ernest Bloch and Georges Boulanger to Dmitri Shostakovich. No genre more powerfully emblematizes Vienna's hallowed chamber music tradition than the string quartet. Joseph Haydn, the father of the classical style, turned the string quartet medium into the lingua franca of Western chamber music. The form was thereafter revolutionized by his student Beethoven, whose imposing cycle of 16 quartets remains the bedrock of the literature today. Carte Blanche Concert II, performed by the Calidor String Quartet, begins with Haydn's quartet in G major, opus 54, number 1, composed in 1788, and ends with Beethoven's quartet in C major, opus 59, number 3, the third of his celebrated Rasimovsky quartets, composed in 1806. At the center of the program are two works by Anton Webern, the expressionist genius of the Second Viennese School. I recently sat with Jeremy Berry, violist of the Calidor Quartet, to hear his perspective on the quartet's upcoming Carte Blanche concert.
Yeah, I think what we're doing with this program is giving a very clear cross-section, so to speak, of Viennese schools of composition over many years. Starting out with just like a really typical, amazingly joyful, beautiful Haydn string quartet, the G major quartet, which is just, it really speaks for itself. It's just full of energy and joy and fun and jokes, like Haydn always is, and just it really exemplifies Haydn at his best. I think he invented the form, but nobody really knew what the string quartet form was publicly until he wrote his 68 string quartets, which, I mean, we're daunted by Beethoven having written 16 quartets, but 68 is just, it's almost unfathomable to think about how he did that, and with such grace and fun and joy in all of his writing. I think it's easy to look back on Haydn's music now and hear it as fairly simple sounding music. I mean, our ear is used to very different things than the audiences would have been used to hearing in the 1700s. But I think what's important to remember when listening to Haydn is at the time, his music probably sounded pretty wild and crazy to people, and even dissonant and aggressive at times. But he's always joking and always throwing curveballs. Whenever you think something's going to resolve one way, he always surprises you and sends you in a completely different direction. Not with the aggression that you'll hear in the Beethoven I do think Beethoven very much grew out of Haydn's style of writing, but Beethoven's naturally aggressive and unpredictable personality, I think, is kind of the root of why his music can be jolting sometimes to listen to. Like, it's beautiful and elegant, and then sometimes you feel like you get hit in the face all of a sudden for two measures, and then it goes back to beauty and grace again. I think Haydn has all of these elements, but always with a sense of poise. The Haydn Quartet is really important for this program because it really anchors that first classical context to begin the program with. And then we jump straight to something completely different, playing two pieces by Anton Webern from the Second Viennese School. And what's funny about this program is that even though Webern wrote two of these pieces, they're by far the two most different pieces from one another from anything on the program, which is why this pairing is so much fun to hear. The Langsommersatz, which is really stems from late romantic sentiment and hard on the sleeve mentality. It's extremely tonal and the tempo is constantly changing, and it's just gushing and oozing with emotion. And then jumping between that and the Webern Five Pieces, which is, he wrote only a few years later. I think it was within 4 years. And he is very much into the 12-tone style of composition. You still get strong feeling and sentiment, but you're in a wildly different harmonic world. These are very short movements in the five pieces. It's almost like you blink and then you're on to the next movement. Very cool, very interesting, extremely different from the Langsommersatz.
The pieces that first heralded Webern's total abandonment of tonality, spanning the years 1908 to 1914, have been commonly referred to as Webern's aphoristic works. This music is marked by its extreme brevity. It is obsessed with softness and silence. Entire pieces range in dynamic from pianissimo to no louder than piano. In the works of his aphoristic period, Webern places unprecedented import on sonic gesture. Movements as short as 20 seconds magnify such instrumental effects as pizzicato, harmonics, spiccato, that is, short off-the-string bow strokes, and collegno, bowing with the wood rather than the hair of the bow, into musical events in themselves. Webern's teacher Arnold Schoenberg noted of these aphoristic works, quote, "One has to realize what restraint it requires to express oneself with such brevity. You can stretch every glance into a poem, every sigh into a novel, but to express a novel in a single gesture, a joy in a breath, such concentration can only be present in the absence of self-pity." Thank you.
This music by Webern in both the tonal long somersaults and the five pieces, though, is incredibly wrought with emotion. And even if the harmonies sound unusual, you'll understand the feeling that's really, really buried in the score, and unmistakably so.
Do you, when you're preparing the Opus 5, do you guys attack the music from an analytical standpoint or like an expressive character standpoint?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think especially with Webern specifically, his music is very gestural. So you look at the score and there's all of these short flourishes of notes. And as a performer, you can get a little entrenched in the analytics of things. But I mean, of course, I didn't know Webern, but playing much of his music, I get the feeling that he would have wanted us to be more obsessed with the feeling of each of these gestures that gets passed around the group. And his music is very dense, and there are motives that are constantly getting passed through the group, and kind of identifying these different cornerstones of each movement and making sure that as a string quartet that we have a similar idea of what the feeling is of all of these different ideas, so that we can make kind of a collective sense of being on the same page for all these things. And then we round out the program at the tail end with Beethoven's Opus 59, number 3, really one of the colossal pillars of the string quartet literature. Once again, a piece that very much speaks for itself. It has this crazy opening that seems to not have a whole lot to do with the piece. It has one of those aggressive introductory chords that's almost like maybe Beethoven threw it in there to get the audience to stop talking at the beginning of the concert. And after a brief minute of this wandering, confused, lost, dissonant opening, almost reminiscent of Mozart's dissonant quartet, actually, which is also in C major, it launches into this incredibly joyful, passionate, exhilarating, and fresh first movement. This third Razumovsky quartet, unlike the other two, it doesn't have a very obvious Russian theme that Count Razumovsky wanted in this set of three string quartets. But I would say the second movement with this very kind of barren and desolate landscape does sort of make you think a little bit of a chilling Siberia feel. full of these augmented intervals that are actually very unusual for Beethoven's writing. So it's somehow this movement to me maybe feels as if it was geared towards Count Razumovsky at least a little bit more than the others. And then we launch into a beautiful dancing light minuet with actually a very virtuosic trio. And then this movement really catapults into really one of the great movements in all of the string quartet literature, which is the fugue, which is the fourth movement, this incredibly virtuosic and fast and crazy fugue that I think only Beethoven was really capable of writing quite like that. I mean, Bach was the master of the fugue, but there was always this pristine elegance and perfection and mathematical equality to everything, where Beethoven kind of, he writes this fugue subject and then just, I don't know, it's kind of like he lights the whole thing on fire. It's just so, so incredible what he does with this music. From a compositional standpoint, I would say that this was a part of Beethoven's life and career where he really threw all the rules to the wind. So he, of course, he's still adhering to classically based forms, but he doesn't really care about the typical rules and regulations, so to speak, of there has to be this, you know, number of themes, they have to be this number of bars, the first movement has to be, you know, maybe eight minutes or less. Like, he really blows up the form, is writing enormously long works in some cases. Actually, the first quartet of the collection, Opus 59, number 1, is close to 40 minutes long, which was fairly unheard of. I think through all of Beethoven's writing, he really heard this incredible music in his head, and he really didn't care how difficult it was going to be for the performer. And this is, of course, it's not a criticism. If anything, it's just he really knew what he wanted, and it's really up to the performer to figure out how it's possible on the instrument, which of course at times presents frustrating challenges here and there, but it's really worth figuring out when the music is this great.
In addition to representing Beethoven's middle, so-called heroic period, during which the composer brazenly pursued an audacious new path in his compositional style, the Razumovsky quartets played a large part in taking chamber music from the salon to the concert hall. That is, they were so unprecedented in their technical demands that even highly skilled amateurs couldn't handle them. Indeed, even the greatest virtuosi of the day had never encountered anything like them. The violinist Felix Radicati found the Opus 59 quartets incomprehensible, to which Beethoven replied, "Oh, they are not for you, but for a later age."
One thing that struck me just looking at the program is that the way that it's constructed, there's a real elegance to it, because you've got two examples of a tradition sort of established and then departed from. You've got the Beethoven kind of breaking the rules of Haydn, as you're talking about, and then like the two Webern's are also kind of like that. He's so much entrenched in a certain way that music was, and then you've got this other Webern that is like a complete rejection of that.
Yeah, exactly. Schoenberg had the mentality that he also kind of imposed on his students that in order to break free of a system, so essentially, you know, classical music or Baroque had gone to classical to romantic music, but all of these forms were kind of based on a similar idea of conflict and resolution, this harmonic language. And now this whole 12-tone system was basically this group of guys saying, okay, I think we've kind of done everything we can with these old systems, so let's do something completely different. But Schoenberg wanted all of his students to have the old forms completely mastered so that you could know what you were leaving and why to go on to something new. And I think that's what makes this juxtaposition of the long Sommersatz to the five pieces so cool, is that you get the sense that Webern could have absolutely composed in any style. He was a virtuoso composer, and you get this incredible example of just really one of the most spectacularly beautiful pieces of music imaginable, like Schoenberg's Verklärtenakt for string sextet that he wrote when he was quite young. It's just over-the-top, beautiful, melodic, tonal, and then, like Webern, you hear things that he wrote within the next year, and you can't believe it's the same composer.
Audio notes are authored and produced by Patrick Castillo and narrated by David Finkel, Patrick Castillo, and Wu Han. Additional mastering is provided by Dahong Situ. Musical excerpts appear courtesy of the following artists and organizations. Haydn's Quartet in G Major, Opus 54, No. 1, Beethoven's Quartet in C Major, Opus 59, No. 3, and Webern's Five Pieces, Opus 5, are performed by the Emerson String Quartet and appear courtesy of Deutsche Grammophon. Webern's Langsamersatz is performed by the St. Lawrence String Quartet and appears courtesy of Music at Menlo Live. Audio Notes is a copyrighted production of Artist Led.